Rules Committee to order, and we have with us Representative Olson, Representative Gardner, Representative Newman, Representative and Vice Chair Bob, what's his name?
Heron.
Bob Heron.
That's O. Curtula right there.
This is O. Curtula and O. Millet. You can see how often we meet together as a Rules Chairman. So thank you for showing up today. We're going to bring up the House Bill 158, and this deals with the recommendations for the state of the State Officers Compensation Commission. And my purpose for having this meeting today is to go ahead and have the commission, and I think we have former senator longtime Alaskan Rick Halford with us, and we have online, we'll have Rick Koch and Mike Miller as well, and they'll be here for questions. I think Mr. Halford is going to do most of the answering. My intention is to go ahead and have him bring the report to us ask questions. My intention is not to move it out today, but we do have a time clock kicking, just to let you know that on the 28th, if we do not act, this goes into force. And so the first thing to do today is to go ahead and have Mr. Halford present it to us. And all the 20 questions we ever wanted to know about this particular commission. And so, Mr. Halford, if you'd come up, please. We also have Carla Schofield here could help us with the fiscal note. So the question on the fiscal note, which I think is rather interesting. So, Mr. Halford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I do appreciate the hearing. I think this is a unique process. And in order to get public understanding and public support, instead of having the hearing process to pass a bill, it's still important to have a hearing process not to pass a bill, but to consider just exactly what the issues before us are. When I was called and asked to serve on this, I said yes, in part because I felt a little bit guilty because I hadn't addressed this when I was here. In fact, I sat here while these schedules stayed from 1991 to date, and it got harder and harder for people in the middle to serve. And because I was not in the middle of that situation, didn't pay attention to it, or for whatever reason, I was one of those few people that still had seasonal employment working for myself, and I could make it work. But it got more and more difficult for people. So I was willing to serve because, frankly, I owe it to the people who followed me, and I wish I had done more about it when I was here. But the commission, I think, was a wonderful group of people in that we had Gordon Harrison, who you all know and has a long record of service in Juneau, Rick Cook, who's the city manager at Kenai, Tom McGrath, who was a long-term businessman in the Anchorage area, is well-known and was very active, and of course Mike Miller, who had the experience both being a long-term legislator as well as being a commissioner. So we had a wonderful group of people, and because the issue is one that's unique in the way it's treated by the statute, we adopted a policy right from the start that we were going to do nothing unless we could all unanimously support it. And that was the way we operated. We went to the Department of Administration. Nikki Neal, the Director of Personnel, did a wonderful job staffing for us. Everything we got went on to a website that was up, I think, 24 hours after we got it. It was on the website. I could not believe how well they did in terms of getting that information out. It was very, very well done. But we had information from NCSL. We had national numbers. We had numbers from all over the country and various studies, plus our own history. And, of course, Legislative Affairs helped us with that. But we went through the process, and we came up with a recommendation, first a preliminary recommendation that included the governor, lieutenant governor, and all the way down. And we had to do that on a very short time frame because we were appointed at the very latest we could and still meet the guideline of getting it in the first 10 days of the session. So actually our first question was to the Attorney General's office, can we meet that? They said yes, and we went forward. But we had our first meeting, offered our preliminary recommendation, which included the governor. The governor's response was that she was uncomfortable taking that at that point. Because that wasn't a critical issue, as critical in terms of there have been more recent changes, it wasn't like the legislature about to drop off the bottom of the salary schedule at a pay scale that puts you in the welfare qualification lines. We didn't address HRSA. We dropped out the governor, lieutenant governor, and we carried forward the legislature. Really, the legislature was, in my opinion, almost an emergency situation. You were sitting on a salary schedule, and you are sitting on a salary schedule, because this wouldn't take effect until next year. But you're sitting on a salary schedule that is, frankly, ridiculous. Nobody is working for what they got in 1991. And you are, and I thank you for that service. And the long-term per diem has been at least in part used by some people to help that, at least to recover their cost and spend a lot more time at it. But because it's very unequally applied, and it's not something that you can put in a normal schedule of compensation, it's treated certainly as compensation by IRS, but that was subject to a lot of problems in terms of public perception. So we did away with that. And it was not our intention, by the way, just so everybody knows, it's not our intention to do away with or in any way restrict Ledge Council's ability to say whether you're getting mileage to go here or you're getting actual costs, or anyone who lives in a district where they have to go somewhere to represent their district should be compensated for going there. And if they go there and there's a normal per diem for that place away from home, that's not the question we're addressing. We're only addressing and I get the terms long-term and short-term and in session, and the way you phrase those, others can explain better than I can. But we're talking about the per diem when you weren't in session and staying at home is the only portion that we were addressing. But we came up with the recommendations unanimously. I strongly support them. I believe that the pay scale for the board of directors of our corporation, one of the greatest natural and human resources corporations on the face of the earth, should be much higher. But I believe that was as high as was reasonable to go in that emergency step with a short-term process that we were able to consider. But we are an ongoing commission. We will come back with recommendations with regard to the governor, lieutenant governor, commissioners in the next cycle. And in that cycle, that will be more critical, because that's the time when you're trying to get people in commissioner-level jobs, for example, in a transition, when you're trying to get a doctor to run the Department of Health and Social Services, or a top-line engineer from an engineering firm to run DOT or something else. It's very difficult to get some of the people you want in specialized areas, and it's important to do that. But I believe you are worth it. You sit across the table from some of the toughest single-minded interests on the face of the earth. And it may be a national health corporation and insurance, or it may be a natural resources corporation, but you have to represent us as our board of directors. And part of the problem is the people you hire as experts to advise you are often going to go right to the other side of the table for their very next job, because they have to. That's the field they're in. It's a very difficult job that you do. I appreciate it, and I was glad to be able to serve and very strongly support the recommendations of the commission. I'll be glad to try and answer any questions.
Well, I have one question, Mr. Halford, and thank you for working on this particular commission. I appreciate that. With your depth of knowledge and history in Alaska and knowledge of the legislative process, but also the broader perspective of having a business in Alaska and being a part of making this great land great. So thank you. One of the things that we tried to do was we tried to put this at arm's length from as much political process as we could, but we still were trying to get not only you to get some good deliberative information, but have public input in the process. And so help me and help the public understand, as you went through this, your solicitation of public input, and do you feel satisfied that you had substantive input, or do you feel that the time frame was adequate?
We tried very hard to get as much input as we could. We actually went to editorial boards, we went to the reporting entities, we did everything we could do to get public notice out there, and there were very few people interested in coming to the hearings. We did get public testimony. We also got written testimony. You have a complete record of all of it. But it was, I think, pretty well considered for the time it was there. But I think it has been beneficial to have the initial hearings down here, the initial presentation on the Senate side, and hearings back and forth, House and Senate. I think they have been very beneficial because there's nothing that really gets people to focus as much as a legislative hearing. You know, the fact is, when a commission sitting in Anchorage at Christmas time is trying to get people involved, it's pretty hard to get them interested. And you get a few people, but you don't get a lot of people. And I think this process is important, and that's why it's odd to thank somebody for introducing a bill to oppose what you're recommending. But in fact, that is very appropriate because it is part of the public process and is what we owe the people that we all deal with.
Any other questions that committee members want to ask? Yes, Representative Curtula.
I have a couple. Thank you, Senator Hofford. It's great to have you here, and thank you and the committee for your work. One of the things that struck me about the initial report was it seemed that the committee had an understanding of the fact that we have a real inequity in the long-term per diem right at the moment. And it seems to me that there are people that actually do work a lot of the days that they could turn in for long-term per diem that don't do it. And sometimes it's because of political concerns that they'll turn up with the high per diem. I mean, I know my father watches those charts like a hawk and says, you know, God forbid that you would turn up at the top of the list, even though the work would, you know, I've worked the work. And I just wondered if you could tell us what you all found or what your feelings were about that and what's happening right now. Because my sense of it is that we've got people who are under-collecting and that then you've got people who have worked the actual long-term per diem and have asked for it, and what it results in is in this real odd disparity that's happening in legislative pay.
Well, I think it's important to express it in the positive. I think there's people under-collecting much more than there might be someone over-collecting. I don't know that I'm going to make that statement. I don't know anything to say that. I think a lot of people spend a lot of time responding to constituent stuff. You know, the fact is that you're on call on a continuous basis, day and night. I mean, when I was here, I had calls as late as 2 a.m. In the years before we could not turn off electricity. I had somebody call me that had gone to a bar that was closing because her power was off and her kids were getting cold. And that was, you know, the bar was closing at 2 a.m. And I was able to do something, not because I had any political power, but because I called somebody up and said, we'll talk about this tomorrow, but get the power back on. And they were willing to do that. But you're on call continuously. And that's one of the good things about Alaska. And it shouldn't change. So I think the amount of time, I mean, you know, one of the problems in the past has been very unreasonable public expectations from us all, and that is we talk about citizen legislature, but in fact the expectations with regard to conflict of interest so limit the other things that you can do that it's very, very difficult to support a family and be an average family person and serve in the legislature. It's virtually impossible. So the citizen legislature, the vision of a citizen legislature is different than the reality of today. You are in session more than half the year when you add just the weekends and the special sessions and everything else. You're on call all year. You're limited from a great many employment opportunities. And it is very, very difficult to say then your pay scale should be based on 90 or 120 days. So, I mean, part of it's our own expectations, conflict of interest, other opportunities. I was one of the few people that did have seasonal employment. But seasonal employment is going down in Alaska. It's not a realistic expectation that people could serve for $24,000 a year in these jobs and represent a full spectrum of the people of Alaska. We have people who are young and don't have a lot of obligations, or people who have a lot of other assets and have worked their way to the point where they can serve. And there's nothing wrong with any of those people, but it's good to have a broader base.
Representative Curtula.
I don't think, though, that your recommendations are suggesting that we're becoming a full-time legislature if we do this change. And I guess that's something I did want to clear up, because, I mean, I can think of the farmers and the fishermen and the people that do or are able to go home and at least have some other kind of a profession.
No, in the sense of unemployment contract or employment expectations, the legislature, and nothing in this report is intended to say that we have a full-time legislature. You have full-time obligations should you choose to exercise them because of your moral obligation and your personal obligation in your mind to your constituents you respond to. But in terms of being full-time, that is not our intention. That is not anything that we're talking about.
Thank you.
Representative Herron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, I guess I'll ask you to reflect on what's going on in the legislature. We do have legislation that would take action on this recommendation from the commission, but the reluctance by many that don't want to make that decision.
Well, it's an odd process, and having sat on that side of the table for many years, it's a different process. There are parallels. You know, when you deal with the negotiated contracts, you generally ratify something, and you ratify it in the sense of funding it, but you really ratify by inaction. And this is ratification by inaction. And that's why it's good to have a hearing, even though you don't necessarily move the bill. But I guess the way to look at it is, for the last 20 years, the other options that you had have failed. There hasn't been a pay raise in 20 years. And the effect on good people not being able to stay, and we all know people that we wish had stayed, that couldn't afford to because they got married, had kids, did something different, and they're now working for oil companies, or they're working for tourist companies, or they're making 10 times what they made in the legislature and spending less time at it. But I think you can understand the bottom lines in terms of how it works.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Millett.
No, I'm good.
No questions.
We do have Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that we're – thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome, Senator. And I've had the opportunity to actually call the senator and talk a few times on the side on this one, and he welcomes that opportunity, I may well add. So this sets an annual salary of $50,400. So right now we have a salary of $24,012, or mm-hmm. somewhere around there.
Correct.
I think my wife would know more than I do, probably. So then we would still receive the in-session per diem would remain the same?
And if you'll let me expand on that, because I think you're asking me a question that reminds me of something I want to clarify.
Well, maybe I can just, if I can finish, then maybe you can comment on both. You know, and it's, and Mr. Rules, Chair, you've dealt with this longer than I have, but that's always been a moving target, but my rent's never decreased. And the cost of groceries has never decreased. And it's based on the federal per diem, you know. Senator, have you looked at saying, okay, maybe part of the recommendations you should have is if it's set here, if the federal level wants to lower theirs based on whatever reason they are, I don't know why the legislature would lower theirs or change theirs, because it's a bouncing target, and it's very hard to try and estimate your costs when you're living in Juneau, because you have to have two homes. Mm-hmm. You have to have two everything. You have to have two sets of towels and dishes and coffee pots and toasters and everything that you have, two sets of clothes, and two of everything. It's amazing. What I never realized that when I first got hired here, that you have to have two of everything. You know, you have to have two homes. You have to have two electric bills. You have to have two everything. And so have you looked at that, you know, of whether you would make recommendations or consider recommendations onto maybe the Ledge Council? I think Ledge Council is the one that maybe has say over that. I'm not sure. But make recommendations to Ledge Council. Have you talked about that?
We did consider that, but you're correct. The Ledge Council is the one that sets that. And we didn't go into anything to do with Ledge Council. The only thing that we addressed was the out-of-session, at-home per diem. But there's a clarifier that I want to make, and you're one of those that is in that situation because you represent a large district where you may have to go more than 50 miles from your home and stay there, but you're still in your district. It was not our intention at all to in any way limit Ledge Council's ability to pay you mileage in your car, to pay you per diem if you have to go and stay in Squinton or someplace in your district. It's not, when I say in district, it's not our intention to be limiting the traditional Ledge Council approval system as it applies particularly to the larger districts. And you got the same thing, Bob. When you go someplace else, you have costs. And those should be reimbursed, and that's still within the purview of Ledge Council. It is only that in-home district, at-home per diem, that we were addressing. We were not addressing any of the other purviews of Ledge Council. And you're right that the federal per diem for Juneau goes up and down. It usually, particularly because of the way it's treated for federal taxes, is a significant part of the benefit package, and I always appreciated it when I was here. But it's under Ledge Council, not the purview of the Salary Commission.
If I may.
Yes, Representative Newman.
Very quickly on that, I think the federals also look at different COLAs that are attached to their jobs, so
You're right. But that's still in your bailiwick.
That's their prey. You know, one problem that I did have with this, Senator, and I brought it up to you, is, you know, I think different legislators work differently in our jobs. And it probably has to do, again, with the size of your district, the number of communities you have in your district, the number of schools, how active you want to be as a legislator. You know, I don't think that there's anything wrong with getting paid a decent day's salary for a decent day's wages. But there's some legislators who don't maybe put in as many days as others. But now we're saying all legislators are going to get paid the same, although some may put in half as much time as others. Some may put in a tremendous amount of time. I'll now speak for myself as a resource chair. Man, where do you end when it comes to resources? You know, you have everything with oil and gas and fish and game and everything that we deal with. And if I'm going to be fully engaged and as knowledgeable as I can as a policymaker in the state of Alaska, that takes a tremendous amount of time, you know, and going out there and talking to the people on the ground, and it just never ends, you know, talking to specialists, people, talking to former legislators who had to deal with oil and gas issues in your day, what's changed, you know, so all of us treat our jobs a little bit different, and all of us put in a different amount of time, but I guess taking away the long-term per diem, and I know that there was a lot of public angst on that, but I think it had to do more with a reporting thing. You know, I didn't have a problem. My staff kept very close records to where I was at, who I talked to, how long I talked to them, what the topic was. I mean, we kept very clear records on that in case anybody ever questioned it, but to each their own, I guess, in case it was questioned. But I know, you kind of look at, what was your discussion that went on that?
Because
I know
we did discuss that, but I think a way to illustrate the other side of that question would be if you were in a very tight district and you felt that your support was marginal and you worked a lot of time, but you didn't feel that you, because of the opponents you knew that you had and the situation out there, that you could put in for the time you were actually working, then you'd be much, much better off under the new system that's equitable for everybody than the old system. But nothing is perfect, and we didn't produce a perfect product and don't claim it to be perfect. I think, you know, in what you're saying, it's a very legitimate question. We did discuss it, but we came down on the side of a very straightforward, very transparent, and very simple system instead of a complex system that a lot of people had trouble with. And I realize that you're not certainly not one of that category, but it was more people that didn't take what they worked than anything else, actually.
Thank you. I also have Carla Schofield here, and I'm going to ask her to come up. And you can stay there, Rick. I'm going to ask Carla to come up and sit next to you. And we also have the executive director here if she wants to chime in. We also, just to remind the committee, we have Rick Cook, and Mike Miller on the line should there be any questions, although I think, Mr. Halford, you're doing a great job in answering the questions. Just to have brought to light the fiscal note, Carla, here I see that on the general fund, the way that it is written, it shows a negative $833,000, and yet it has been at least purported to me that this is a pay raise. So help me understand how you come to this conclusion and how we are to proceed with a general understanding of the change from one pay structure to another.
Certainly, Representative Coghill, what it amounts to is because these recommendations of the Salary Commission would become law with no action by the legislature, the amount that it would take to fund the salary increase was included in our FY10 request. So the impact of this legislation, if it passed, would be to basically eliminate that funding from our FY10 budget. So, but in fact, you're correct. This is an increase, and the increase, though, for the first year would only be for 6 months, and we've offset that salary increase by taking just a portion of the long-term per diem, because there'd actually only be 2 months left in the year by the time the increase went into effect. The following year, where you have the full year of the salary increase, we would take more of the per diem away, $630,000. We budget currently about $810,000 for long-term per diem. So over the course of 2 years, and the increase actually goes into effect over 2 years, it would be $800,000 the first year and $300,000 the next year for $1.2 million, actually. But it's a gradual phasing in.
So just so that those listening in, that the change from one pay to another is going to be starting at about $800,000 to end up to about a $1.2 million increase on a annual budget of what?
For the legislature's
yes,
salaries?
For the legislature.
Question. Okay. So
$4.6 million. Okay.
That would be the increase.
All right. So I just wanted not only you as a committee to get a context of that, but the general public to get a context of it. So I'd have to, I'm not working the percentage in my head because I'll get it wrong, believe me. So.
Yeah. And if you had more questions about, actually legislators' salaries currently are actually equivalent to a range 5 on the salary schedule, and they haven't changed since 1991. There are only 3 employees in the 3 branches of government that are range 5s. Your salaries aren't tied to the salary schedules any longer, and you don't get the cost of living increase. So in July, when the cost of living increase goes into effect for state employees, we won't be able to compare your salaries any longer to the state salary schedule.
What would that compare to? Let's say, what would an entry-level clerk at, a health and social service agency generally come in at probably around a range 10, I would think, right? 8 or 10?
Yeah. Well, I remember when I started at Health and Social Service many, many years ago, it was a range 8, so I imagine that's probably what it still is.
That's just the context of, I just want to set the stage for the context.
Yes.
That's one of the reasons why I didn't think I'd move this out of committee right now. So,
so what are the range 5 jobs, just out of curiosity?
Well, I'm not totally sure, but I suppose it would be probably a very, maybe we would pay a high school student to come in and help us in the office, something like that.
How appropriate. Sorry.
Any questions on the fiscal note? Carla, thank you. That helps us get the context of where we're at, about what the increase is going to be, because I don't want people to think that it's not an increase, but as far as a significant increase, I think with the long-term per diem or the stipend that we've been getting and the inequity that has in it, over against this new salary commission proposal. We're talking about $1 million a year over a $4 million budget. So I mean, it's a you know, significant bump, but it also kind of washes out the inequity question. So Mr. Halford, you wanted to chime in on that one?
Just because I didn't say it clearly enough. If you took the average of everybody's per diem and added it to the 24,000, you get the 35 or 36,000. So the difference in the 35 and 36,000 plus benefits and plus the costs for the 60 members is what the fiscal note is based on. The high side of per diem was 46 or 48,000. So even those who were taking the most per diem got a slight bump by the change. But that may be a shorter way of explaining what I should have said.
This is your chance, committee members. Any question you ever wanted to ask a commission member? Pretty well satisfied? We have online Rick Cook and Mike Miller. Either of you two want to chime in with anything that you've been hearing or want to comment on at this point?
Senator Halford has done a very good job of summarizing the deliberations that the commission went through. I think it is important that, and he pointed out that everything that was done was unanimous on the part of the commission. And I'll just put the mute back on. If somebody's got any questions, I would be happy to answer them. And I thank the governor for the opportunity to serve on this commission.
Thank you, Mr. Cook, I appreciate you willing to serve. In fact, both you and Mr. Miller and the other members, including Mr. Halford here, took an issue in a short time, got a lot of public comment out, and I agree with Mr. Halford on the staffing that they got, just phenomenal work. So, Mr. Miller, anything?
Just to follow up, I think Senator Hopper has done a great job in explaining what we went through with the public meetings and that we had, and I think he pretty well laid it out. And I think that I personally echo many of Senator Hopper's comments. I believe that this is the right thing to do. Of course, the ball ultimately lies with the legislature. With this particular level of people legislation, and that's the way it should be. And I think it was a very critical step to move forward, because there are some inequities. And if we want to continue to get qualified people in the legislature to represent all Alaska, I think we need to go this direction.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. I appreciate it. The qualified part, though, you got to be careful about how you talk to those presently sitting at the table, because it's been my estimation that the people that we do get are very qualified, but it is true that there are a lot of people who will not run.
I
can't
get qualified. I
myself now. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. I didn't want to pick on you, but I didn't want people to think down here that the quality that they've gotten in historically and presently has been diminished, but there are some people who will not run. And so I think what you've done is you've made it harder for people who have children and who have a career that they're trying to build on to serve in the legislature. So it does make that much more difficult. I'll grant you that. I, for myself, had to abandon my career in order to do this, and so that has become another issue that that I had to deal with, and so I made my wife get a career. So I'm not a kept man now. Not really. A flower shop is not any way of keeping you in business. Well, what I wanted to do is I wanted to give us a chance to hear it. As I said, my intention is not to move it at this point, But we do have a time clock. The 28th of this month is when we need to take action on it if we're going to reject it. And so at this point, I've been going around talking to various different legislators. At this point, there is not enough support to reject the commission report. And so until there is, and I will keep you all folks abreast of that, if I find a groundswell of people that want to bring this to the floor of the House, I will have to have a committee meeting so that we can move that. Mr. Halford, you said you had one more thing to say.
Just one last comment. It is a great pleasure to sit here with the children of two of my educators as I served here. And as the torch goes forward, I very much appreciate your being here. And if you have any questions how to vote on this thing and just are undecided, let your spouse vote.
Yeah, that's a good point. And members, thank you for allowing us to have this meeting. I think it was very valuable. It was good for the public, I think, to listen in on our conversation as we begin to think about how to handle the recommendation for this commission. And without any further discussion, the Rules Committee will adjourn, keeping this in committee.
Thank you.